All right. So we're online? Cool. So if you saw me this morning, Scott Hunter, program manager on .NET at Microsoft. You can follow me at CoolCSH. I've got Seth here in the back of the room. I might even ask him to be kind of crazy and even do some moderation kind of thing with me today. But I plan to do some content, and then after we do the content, might have a Q&A about how a lot of this stuff works. And this is a, I'll be just honest, this is gonna be a lower level session than most sessions today. We're gonna go a little deeper than a lot of things have. First off, I wanna start off and show a couple websites. If you wanna take a picture of this, if you want the URLs for this, these are the sites where you can actually get all the code. The first one I have up here is .net.github.io, and that's the site where the .NET CLI resides at. It's the getting started place for .NET CLI. The second one is github.com/.NET/CLI. That is the actual GitHub repository where the CLI is put together. And that's where if you want to get the latest, greatest nightly builds, you can get those. And I'm going to show you how to install the latest, greatest nightly build and not screw up your machine in the process. And then finally, obviously, Visual Studio is just code.visualstudio.com. That's the Visual Studio VS Code command line interface. And important as well is github.com/omnisharp. And that's where the C# extensions are. And I'll show you how to get the latest betas of those are so you can put a machine together that can actually do .NET CLI today. Before we even talk about the CLI, we should talk about what we used to have. This machine, I don't know if it'll have it. So this was the way that you actually installed the ASP.NET 5 bits all the way through November of last year. We had a series of tools called DNX, and DNX was the technology that ASP.NET 5 was built on top of. ASP.NET 5 was the first framework we thought about saying, how do you build a framework that has a .NET on the machine that's not globally installed or not installed via MSI or not in some Windows System 32 files. We don't need this anyways. But if you install VS 2015 and you install any of the previews of ASP.NET 5 and you dropped a command line, you had a couple of commands. You had DNVM, which would list the number of runtimes you had on your machine. You had DNX, which would actually launch and run applications. And you had DNU, which lets you restore NuGet packages and so on. I mentioned this morning that we've gotten rid of all that. And the reason we got rid of it was DNX and the concepts behind it were really built by the web team, and they were not designed for building cross-platform class libraries that ran on Mac and Linux and other platforms. They weren't designed for building console applications that ran on all those platforms. And so, and they especially were not designed for building native applications. One of the things we plan to do with the .NET Core work moving forward is let you actually build a native executable. So either a native DLL or native executable. So you would be able to actually write a library in C#, and then anybody could use it on Linux, Mac, Windows, and hopefully in the future iOS and Android as well. So it means you can use .NET to build libraries that you share for everywhere, just like the folks in Unix have done for forever. And so DNX, DNU, DNVM all go away. So let's take a look at and see what's the replacement for those things. I might actually have those tabs loaded here. I do not. So let's grab this one. American politics. This is the .NET Core website, and this will be replaced in about a month and a half with a brand new .NET site that we're building that will encompass everything we're doing. And this has some getting started that you can run here. Here's how to acquire this for Windows, Linux, Mac, Docker. That's interesting. There's also some documentation. This is about to get refreshed as well with some getting starteds, some scenarios, some .NET core concepts, and so on. So this is just a general place to go and find some stuff about the .NET CLI. But let's jump around and get in the weeds a little bit. The site that I prefer is this site. And this is the actual GitHub repository that has the latest CLIs in it. And so it's going to have some documentation here as well. And we'll get into this in a second. But the most important thing, if you want to actually grab the latest bits, you can come and run installers. There's an installer that just installs .NET. And I'll explain what that means. The .NET installer just installs one command on your machine. That's the .NET command. It installs no SDKs for compiling and building and stuff like that. And I'll show this in the command in a second. The SDK will add a whole bunch of other commands. And I'll show you what those look like. So we'll bring a prompt up here. And I'll type, let's go into a folder that I've got some code. Yeah, I can. Is that better? Okay. So let's go into test. And actually, let's nuke test. Or just create a new one. We'll create a foo-foo. So now that I have a .NET command, I can type .NET. Nothing really pops out of it. But the main thing it's going to show you here is it's actually asking for a DLL to run. And the reason it's asked for a DLL to run is .NET is the driver application for launching all .NET Core applications. And the reason it asks for a DLL and not an .exe is because when you build a .NET CLI application, it just emits the libraries required to run. It today doesn't put a bootloader on the actual application. So the app that I'm going to build in a second will be a completely portable library, meaning that or application, meaning that when I build the app, I could copy all that folder to a Mac, to a Linux machine or whatnot, and they would still run. So obviously the executable part of that is a little different on each platform. On a Linux machine, it's just a file that's marked as being executable. On a Mac, it's something very similar. On Windows, we have an .exe that has a bootloader bolted to the front of it. We're likely to build some kind of command in the .NET CLI at some point that says, go build me a binary for Windows. But that's why it asks for a DLL. That's the way to run an application. I can also do .NET help, and you're going to see a bunch of commands that are built in. One is we have a new command, and that will actually create and scaffold an application for you to build your first application. Today it builds a console application. By the time we get to RTM, it'll actually prompt you, just like VS does, for building a web application, a class library application, all the different types of application. There's also .NET Restore, which was the equivalent in the old world of DNU Restore. And all .NET Restore actually does is runs NuGet. So one of the things we did is we made all of our standard command lines for building .NET applications map to this. .NET build, build your application so you can run it. .NET publish will actually create the final product that you can actually run. So if you want to build a self-contained application, .NET publish will do that. If you want to build an application you can copy to another machine, .NET publish will do that. .NET run runs the application. It doesn't take a DLL because it will find the DLL in the folder underneath your application. And then test will run your test, REPL will launch a shell for testing C# stuff, and then pack will create a package for you. So if you're building a class library, you run pack, and the output is a NuGet package. So it makes it very easy to run these things. So let's try this. And by the way, this is not going to work. And so I'll do .NET new. And it is thinking. For a long time. Okay, so you'll see all I got out of this was a project JSON and a program.cs. So the next step is, first off, if you want to try the stuff I'm showing today, what I recommend, and I'll go back to the slides and just talk about this for a second, is the tooling. Let's go put the tooling on the box, and I'll show you how to put the tooling on the box. This is important. So we will go to the library here for OmniSharp. I've already got VS Code on my machine. I'm going to go to the library for OmniSharp. This is super important. And so I'm at GitHub OmniSharp, and there's a project here called OmniSharp-VS Code. I'm going to click this, go to releases, and here is a brand new release candidate number 2. It was just put up a few days ago, and I would download this file. Now, this is a weird, because VS Code doesn't understand V6 or anything like that, but it's done in this way because the VS Extension Gallery only knows how to serve V6 files. So they created this name just so the existing VS extension page would actually work for this thing. So now I've got it downloaded, and what I would do if I want to use VS Code for my project is I would type code dot. I have the extension installed, but I'm still going to go through the process to show you how to do this. I'm going to go to File, Open. I'm going to go to my download folder here, and I'm going to click that extension.
Or the same for the insider version, right?
The insider version.
VS Code.
This is the RTM version of VS Code.
But we're same way.
Yeah, it'll work for this. They changed this in VS Code about a month ago, where it's understood V6 files. So I don't know what the question is exactly. Okay. So I restart. After I restart, you'll notice something else here. And that is down here. It's downloading and configuring the .NET Core Debugger. And so this is something that this new extension enables you to do, is actually not only build C# applications, but debug C# applications. This stuff is rough, and that's why I want to show you some of this stuff. So it's successfully installed. So now I've got a debugger. I've got C# IntelliSense, and I'm good to go. So VS Code actually created this lock file for me. I'm going to delete this, and I'm going to explain the lock file too. So let's delete this. So I've got an application here, and let's do a restore. This would be the equivalent of DNU restore in the past. Now it's .NET restore. Seems to work for the most part, and I'm going to do a .NET build. And that's where things are going to go south. Okay, so let's see if they stay south. .NET run. Okay, so what happened here was I built this application with .NET new. It seemed to compile, but it doesn't run. This is a bug in the tool chain today, and this is why I wanted to do this talk in some ways. So if you guys want to try these bits and play with these bits, and by the way, I have the VS version of the bits, which I told people I would give them after the show. So if you guys want to come up after this and grab some bits from me, if you have laptops or anything I can copy a memory stick to, I'm happy to do that. Let's go figure out why this doesn't run. So I'm going to type .NET version and find that I've got 002392 that was installed as part of my application. There's a bug in .NET new today where .NET new does not put the right version in your project.json. So let's copy this version. Uh, 002392, which honestly, if you look at this, 002392, I can just take the 3 off. And I'll save the file. So what happens is we are putting in a version today that's higher, way higher than the current version, and the runtime looks at that and goes, this makes no sense. So fix the version. My restore now does a lot more work than it did before because things are now healthy again. I'll do the build. And what you'll find is even the version I put in was not the right version because it's actually telling me it ended up using this version, and I'll explain why it used this version. It ended up using version 24008, even though if we go back and look in our editor, we put in 002392. But these are close enough that it will actually auto-upgrade to the next version, and I'm good to go. So if I come over here, I can now say .NET run, and this runs. So let's go look at how some of this stuff works. So I'm in VS Code. This is my application. You see I get IntelliSense. Because we installed the extensions, I can put breakpoints in, and all that stuff will just work fine for me. But let's go look behind the scenes. How does this work? Where is .NET on my machine? How does it all go together? So let's bring up the file system here. And where .NET resides in your machine is it resides in program files, .NET. And so if you look in this folder, all there is a .NET .exe file and some folders underneath it. And so let's talk about what these are and how they work and how they go together. So .NET .exe is the .exe that I was running. So all you have to do to have a .NET framework on your machine is create this folder, which you'll get off of GitHub, put it anywhere you want on your machine. We have an MSI that installs it into program files .NET, but I can copy one anywhere on the machine I want. And then put that in my path, and I'm good to run .NET. Now what's interesting here is there's two folders in .NET. One is there's the shared folder. And the shared folder is the equivalent of having a .NET framework on your machine. So if I look in here, I've got Microsoft netcore.app, and I have a version of .NET here. .NET 100RC2300.2392, which by the way is not right because you saw the tools were kind of misaligned earlier. If I drill in that folder, what you're going to do is you're going to find all the DLLs that make up a .NET framework. I scroll through here. This is an entire .NET framework. It's all that's required to build a console application. If I come over here and do a properties on it and zoom in here, you'll see that I've got basically 60 megs of files in here, and that's the equivalent of what we would call a .NET framework. So it's only 60 megs, super, super small, not the equivalent of what a .NET framework is today. A .NET framework today is about 200 megs, and then we JIT it and everything else, and it ends up being about a gig. So you can see the smallest .NET framework I have here is about 57 megs.
It's the same as the NetStandard library?
This is technically NetStandard is what this is, yes. Okay. So... And I can even describe what NetStandard is. NetStandard is actually interesting. NetStandard, or even this, let's look at what this is a little bit. So in my application, you're going to see that I reference that I want a Microsoft .NET Core.app. And you might ask, what is that?
That's new. This is
technically... A slice of .NET Standard. There's .NET Standard, and then there's a version of .NET Standard called .app. And what that means is the .app version of it contains the host to actually start and run an executable. .NET Standard itself is just the libraries, and so we have a couple different variants of this thing. One is the standard, then one is the standard, the app version of the standard, which contains the host to actually run an app. But if you actually go to NuGet.org and look this up, you'll find it in NuGet, because this is technically a NuGet package. This is the equivalent of what we call a meta package. Yes. So what the way that a shared framework works, and a shared framework is a framework that's pre-installed in your machine, is we create a NuGet package that we call a meta package, and that means it just contains other packages, and that package defines technically what .NET Standard is. So there's one meta package that defines all the pieces of .NET that make up a framework. Yes.
Right now, the execution environment is installed in your application.
Right. Yeah. So in the DNX world, a bunch of us on the ASP.NET team and the .NET team said these things are going to be in the DNX, and there was no way to define what that actually meant and what that was. So we defined this is what it is, and some of it was shoved into the actual runtime itself that we like MS Core Lib and some other stuff we just hand put on your machine. In this world, we're way more descriptive because you're actually giving us we give you a meta package. It defines all the things. If you wanted to build a different shared framework on your machine, you could create your own meta package and go choose other pieces of .NET. You could say that, you know what? Every application I have uses JSON.NET, and I want JSON.NET to be on the machine and part of my application. And so you could go create your own meta package here, and when you do that, what this basically tells us is when we compile your application, don't take any of the packages inside the meta package and put them in the bin folder of your application, because we know they're installed somewhere on the machine like a .NET framework would be on your machine. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so today we'll probably have, we might have variants of this. We might have one for regular applications. We might have one for ASP.NET that contains more stuff.
Naming is
super hard. In fact, I don't like some of the naming that we have. Right.
I think it's hard in that sense. If when you become from PCL to that standard,
We have a lot of problems. So I'll be very honest. We have a lot of problems today. Number one is, if I asked you what's in the .NET standard, you would not have any good way to figure that out. Even if you went and looked at the meta package, it would still be confusing for you. So somewhere, somehow, between now and RTM, we're going to have to find a way to go and tell the customer, this is the stuff in the .NET standard. Today, if you go to the documentation for .NET, it tells you, here's what's in framework 3.5, here's what's in framework 4.0, here's what's in framework 4.5. I need to go fix the documentation so I can say, hey, what .NET standard are these things in? So it's a repackaging and a revisualization of .NET, and we haven't done that work yet. In fact, we owe all of you guys two documents. A human readable document on what the .NET standard is, and a human readable document on how to build packages. If you go back even to this last summer, when we shipped UWP, most of our customers could not figure out the Newtonsofts of the world, couldn't figure out how to build a JSON.NET that ran in that world because the package format got complicated. And trust me, we understand that, and we're trying to address that. Let me show you a couple other magical things about this. Yeah, I'll in the future. Thank you, Seth. So let's look at the app that we have here. So this is where the folder is. This is the .NET on my machine. Let's go look at the app that comes out of this. So if I go into Fufu, and I go into the bin folder and debug, here is my app. It's fufu.dll, and that's because, as I was saying, we're making these applications portable, meaning I could take this folder, copy to a Mac, copy to Linux, and it would just run. And also, if you look at the folder actually is a reasonably sized folder. So it's going to be 104K. So hello world, 100. If I xcopy that folder to any machine that I've installed .NET, and let's go to, if I've just installed the .NET Core installer here, the first one with no SDK tools and whatnot, any machine that has this on it will actually run that executable if I copy that folder to the machine. And that's part of the plan. But that's not all of the envisioning of .NET that we had. One, the reason there's that shared SDK or that shared folder or that shared .NET is because I came from the ASP.NET world, and I don't want to have my web server have 30 copies of .NET all strewn across them. So we wanted to, and I also want to make publish very quick. When you publish an ASP.NET application, I don't want to have to publish 50 megs of .NET every single time you publish. And so we created this concept of the shared SDK that you saw, or the shared framework. But let me show you something cool here. If I come over here, and so right now my app is what we call internally a portable app. And it's portable. This line right here, type equals platform, means it's semi-portable. Actually, I take that back. That does not mean that. Type platform means that we're going to use the shared SDK. So check this out. Let's take this, and let's comment this out. We'll go back over here. We'll do a restore. Okay, that looked like it went okay. We'll do a .NET build, and now it doesn't work. And let me explain why it doesn't work. Before, I was saying, use a shared version of .NET that I've installed somewhere on the machine. When I came here and changed that, removed that platform is the thing telling us to treat that NuGet package as a shared resource. When I remove that from this, now the system thinks I'm trying to build an application that runs on a particular platform. and the application would also be completely self-contained as well. So let's see what it says. It says this project has not been restored, or restore failed, or this project does not list one of the runtimes in the runtime section. So let's go change this. I thought I kept this around. So let's try this. And let's grab one of those. We'll grab that one, Win10-X64. And I'll save this. I am. That's why the IntelliSense doesn't like me. So now I've removed using the shared framework, and I've told it I want you to actually output me an X64 Windows application. So now I can come back over here, do this one more time, grabs a few more bits. Build should work now. Good. And I can run this just like I would have before, but I'm going to do something different in a second here. I'm going to actually publish this. And publish means I want to prepare this so I could actually go share it with somebody else. So let's go look and see what that does. Here's my Win10 X64 that I asked for. Here is the published folder that I asked for. And now, I've built a self-contained application because every DLL in the .NET framework required for the application is in the folder. And if I look down here somewhere, there's even a foo-foo.exe in here. And I've got a Win10 application. And I can right-click on this and do properties. And you see that I'm in about a 44 meg range because I basically copied from all the packages required for .NET to work into the actual folder to build the application. In the future, what I really hope for as well is to have another command line switch, which is .NET, which will be native, which will then say take all of those things, compile them directly into a single executable that you can actually run, and then that size should shrink down quite a bit. I would expect, instead of being 50 megs, I would expect to be, we actually had this running in November of last year, it was about 2 megs, which is very, very good. So a true story is we were at what was called the Microsoft Connect event in November, and we were going to show this native compilation as part of one of the demos, and Scott Hanselman, I think, showed it on stage. And I was like, no, don't show it, because the Hello World was 2 megs, and I thought that was ridiculous. Until we built... The native stuff that we have today is for the UWP applications, and that native stuff doesn't do as all the stuff that you and I would want native to do. So, for example, ASP.NET, for example, can't run in that native because you can't do reflection emit. There's a whole bunch of .NET things that are removed in that version of the native tool chain. We want to find some way to bring some of that back so you can be more flexible, and at the same time, in frameworks like ASP.NET, we will look at making them have ways of doing things like dependency injection without using, maybe do compile time dependency injection. But with the native tool chain, it shrinks down to 2 megs. And as I said, I was kind of freaked out until I realized that Go, when you use the Go language and make a native tool, the same app, it was 3 megs. So I'm like, we're a meg smaller, so we're OK. So that's kind of a quick run through of the .NET CLI and some of the stuff that you see here. And as I said, it is using standard. Let me show you something else as well. This is what I just got bits right before I came to the conference. This movement from the DNX to the CLI has taken us a long time. And so I am showing you the first bits that we got on Saturday, actually. And now if I go to web, you'll see that I can build a regular ASP.NET application. That's a system web application. I can build an ASP.NET Core application that will be a .NET CLI core-based application, and I can build an ASP.NET Core web application that runs on the full framework. If I go to .NET Core, that's a new node, and you would used to see class library and console over in the ASP.NET area. Now you'll see that I've got class library, console application, and ASP.NET here. And these actually do run. So let me create one of these. And as I said, as an offer, if anybody wants these bits, they're not publicly available yet. We're probably 3 to 6 weeks away from making them publicly available. But they do seem to work. And so if anybody's brave and wants to grab a copy before you leave today, you're welcome to grab a copy. I will say we had our QA team at work make sure that they did not destroy the machine. There are a couple install glitches, but if you show up, I'll tell you how to fix the install glitches if they do happen. So now I'm back in familiar ASP.NET, but if I look, now my project JSON will have some of the same stuff we just saw before. Here's my .NET Core app, just like you saw for the console application. And you see a few more things. This stuff here is stuff we put in just for a short period of time. And what that tells us is, because we have not shipped .NET Standard yet, we have to somehow, we know that packages that compiled against DNX should be, for the most part, compatible with .NET Standard. And so what this basically tells us is it's okay to use any NuGet package that builds an output of .NET 5.6, DNX Core 5.0, or portable, meaning any PCL, any DNX-based NuGet packages should work. And that's how we can create this new thing and make sure that the existing NewtonSoft will still work with it, even though it's not been precompiled yet to support the platform. No. So the question was, does this mean you have to have DNX on your machine? If you look at inside of a NuGet package, like if you go grab the NewtonSoft NuGet package, it has a folder inside of it for every platform it supports. And so all this is saying is any NuGet package that has any of these three folders inside of it will let the system work because we think it should work. And this is our way of saying, I cannot expect all the NuGet people in the world to magically in one day have created a .NET standard version of their packages. So this says, we're going to assume these things are all compatible, so whether you've got those folders in your libraries or not, your application will still run. And so half a year from now, this will come out. But this is basically a patch or a Band-Aid until we've actually shipped RTM bits and all the package authors can actually build .NET standard NuGet packages. Once we run our analysis tools across the repositories and find out that people have done that, we'll start ripping these Band-Aids off. But these are basically just Band-Aids. But this app, for the most part, is just it's not going to surprise you. It looks like ASP.NET, except it's running against .NET CLI. And to prove that, I should be able to actually, first off, the app does run, I hope. And if I go the one we created at 5 o'clock. No, not that one. So I'm in the folder of the application. And this should compile the application and run the application, showing that it's actually running on the same tool chain. There you go. Yep, application started running. So, as I said, all the stuff I showed earlier in the presentation is available today if you want to grab it. I went through these showing how to do a new, how to grab the version, how to fix the file so it actually will run. You can build and run. this is the directions. I'll make sure these slides are somewhere as well, how to get VS Code running, get all the debugger hooked up and the extensions. And then finally, as I said, we talked about RC1 shipped in November. We have new bits 3 to 6 weeks before they're public. You're welcome to them today. And I think I am close to time. And so if you have any questions, I'd love to take a couple questions or come up and grab some bits. .NET CLI, the question is, what is the timeline for .NET CLI? So obviously you see the bits are available today. In 3 to 6 weeks from now, we'll ship what we call ASP.NET or .NET Core RC2, which will also have ASP.NET RC2. Those bits will install the CLI for you. I would expect an RTM of the CLI probably 3 to 6 weeks after that. So we're hoping that July. I mean, I can't guarantee that, but that's the hope. Any other questions? Yeah.
So, what is the VR, or what are the VR reasons to make this kind of change? Is it UCOP, or you are thinking to try to integrate the front-end application to Mac, or Linux, Adobe, container software?
So the question is, why are we making the changes that we're making? And there are a couple of reasons we made the changes that we made. One of the biggest complaints that we have with the .NET framework today is that you cannot have multiple .NET frameworks on your machine. You can only have .NET 2 and .NET 4. And you'll have some version of either of those. For example, the latest version of .NET 2 is 3.5. That sounds goofy, but that's the truth. And the latest version of .NET 4 is 4.6.2. Now, what most of my customers will tell me is, Scott, I want to use the latest version of .NET because I want to take advantage of await. I see that requires .NET 4.5 or higher. And they go to their server and they install .NET 4.5 on it, and all the other applications on the box break. Because some incompatibility we've made or some bug we've fixed affects applications. And so I want to enable customers to be able to use the latest versions of my tool sets on any machine and not risk affecting any other applications on the machine. And so to address that, we thought there was two ways of doing that. One is to create that shared folder that you saw, where I can have as many .NET frameworks on the machine as I want, and my application can choose which one it wants. And the other way is to actually put the .NET framework inside the application, either as DLLs, or to use a native compiler to compile it natively into the application. That's why. And if you're using a UWP application, Universal Windows application today, they compile the .NET framework into those applications, meaning it doesn't matter what version of .NET your Windows 10 machine has, your UWP application will work fine on that box. So those were two reasons that we made the change that we made. And the third reason, which you were alluding to, is we live in a world now where a lot of people that are running web applications, especially in the cloud, using Docker. And today, there is no way to run Docker on Windows, and that led us to wanting to be able to support ASP.NET applications running in Docker, and so we made ASP.NET cross-platform. And once we made ASP.NET cross-platform, it was important to have a tool chain that was command-line driven. Windows is very VS, Visual Studio driven, and we're going to keep it that way, but when you get to those other platforms, they're mainly command-line driven. So what we decided to do was have a command-line interface for .NET that worked everywhere. Visual Studio still hides all that from you, but technically behind the covers, when I did Control F5 in Visual Studio, it's basically running those same commands that you saw me running from the CLI. And those are a couple of the reasons that we went down this path. But the main one, honestly, is I want to be able to innovate at a fast rate of speed and not risk breaking the other applications on the machine. So if you want to be putting a .NET Core ASP.NET application on any server, you're guaranteed you'll not break any application on the server. And I think that's super critical. And then the other reasons were, the final reason would be, I don't want a customer or anybody that's looking at technology to have any reason not to use .NET. And that means .NET needs to run on every platform, iOS, Android, Windows, Linux, Mac. Maybe you don't need to, but I don't want somebody to go, well, I'm afraid that if I buy this, I'm going to be locked into Windows. No, you're not locked into Windows. I don't want any of that. And then the other part of this thing is, you know, we open source the entire tool chain, the frameworks and everything from top to bottom, because I never want to have any customer come to me and go, well, Scott, we're going to use Java because Java's open source, and you're not open source. But it's kind of weird. For Java being open source, they just sued, Oracle just sued Google for $9 billion a few weeks ago for using their open source libraries. I don't know if anybody noticed, but at the Build conference a few weeks ago, we also declared that we would not sue anybody for using .NET. So I think that's kind of important as well, as I go and tell people that I'm open source and I'm cross-platform, and I have a we will not sue you for using our platform clause in our technology as well. So let me get the guy behind you. It is actually expecting to find a main method. So in fact, let me show you, now that you asked that question. The question was, when you run the .NET command and pass a DLL, what is it expecting to find there? That's a great thing to show you here. So this is the ASP.NET application that we just built. And check this out. So you'll find that every ASP.NET application is technically a console application. And this is I'll explain the reasons we did this. ASP.NET historically has been very magical. A request came into IIS, some native code in IIS booted up a CLR and loaded ASP.NET and called some entry point that you've never seen. One of the things that we really care about in the new world is we want to be very explicit in everything that we do. I don't want there to be any magic in the framework that you can't see or understand how we're working. And so you can see here, we run the main method, and I boot up a host for hosting an application. I say use Kestrel, which is our web server. I give it folders. I tell it that in this particular case.
You build the pipeline.
Yes. So this is actually just getting the pipeline. This actually tells it where the pipeline is. So notice here it says use startup. Startup, that's a class. And if I go to my startup class,
you can work with the pipeline too.
And my startup class, there's where I boot up my pipeline. So there's nothing. I'm going to run main first. This tells it to go start the web server and do all that kind of stuff. And then it says, once I've got a web server started, I'm going to go create a pipeline of middleware and feed that pipeline of middleware to the web server. And so the idea here is there's nothing hidden. It's all explicit. You can control it all. You can remove as much of it as you want. There's no magic in the system anymore, which is. Yes. Yes, you could do that. So the question was, if I had a DLL, let's say I'm Newtonsoft, Jason.net, nothing prevents him from putting a main method in his application or his DLL. And if you said .net and ran his DLL, it could give you the help for Jason.net. A library is just if you have an entry point, we can find and call the entry point. So yes, you had one final question. I'm actually out of time now, like hardcore, so. The question is, are we working with the SQL Server team?
No, they're working with SQL Server.
Yes.
Is this just the same or kind of similar architecture?
You mean like being able to run .NET code inside a SQL Server? SQL Server today has the ability for you to write store procedures and such in .NET. We have not reached out to them yet about using this model or adopting this model. We might in the future.
But to run SQL Server and Linux, they are doing
SQL Server is not written in .NET. SQL Server is a C++ app. They're using different technology to make it go. Thank you, guys.